Welcome to Ballistic Radio, the fastest growing gun talk show in the country. Join us. We're going to explore the topics of firearms, self-defense, and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough, you need dynamite to take them off. Now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, and general derp at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me this evening, Mr. Andy Ulrich and Matt the Minion. Gentlemen, how are you doing tonight?
Derp is working its way into just about every show.
Yeah, it's a really good term for almost everything. Just a quick reminder, this segment brought to you by Colt. Colt, the legend continues. So we're going to be joined this evening by Dr. William April to discuss some of the things that are happening in our world these days and possibly why we need to be a little bit more prepared for the unthinkable, or maybe why we don't need to be prepared for the unthinkable. We're going to discuss the psychology behind that. In general, I'm hoping what is going to happen is some of the strange things I do, William's going to, make it seem like it's okay. We'll see. I don't know.
Related to firearms, at least, right?
Yeah. Yeah. My strange affinity for, like, Lucky Charms and Starbucks coffee is not, there's no justification for that. Just a quick update. The Knights Armament Test Rifle is at 9,500 rounds, has not been cleaned. Has not had a malfunction, in my opinion. It did have a stoppage that I documented on the Facebook page where we had a failure to extract. I initially had blamed that on the gun, though on closer inspection, and after looking at the bolt in detail out of the firearm, I've come to the conclusion that it was actually a bad piece of brass that caused that. That having been said, wanted to document it. I can let you all judge and draw your own conclusions. Either way, depending on how you look at it, we're at 9,500 rounds, no cleanings, and either one malfunction or zero malfunctions. I'm inclined to say zero. It's really impressive. No parts breakages. I'm curious to see if the rifle will keep performing at the level it's performing at. Anyway, without further ado, let's talk to Dr. William April. William, are you on?
I am, John. How are you?
Not too bad. Thanks for taking some time to talk to us this fine, fine evening.
Happy to be here.
Well, I appreciate it. For those that are not familiar, and everyone should be at this point, but if you are a first-time listener to the show, can you just go over your background just a little bit, William?
Well, sure. I'm a mid-career mental health professional. I'm licensed in my state, and I've worked in mental health for almost 20 years now, across the spectrum of care, everything from inpatient acute to long-term outpatient care, substance abuse, et cetera. But I was also a sheriff's deputy early in my life, and so have worked quite a bit in the areas where mental health and the law overlap. Been training for a good number of years, teaching since the early 90s. I tend to wind up in all these weird areas talking about criminal motivation, but lately have been teaching quite a bit in the areas of mental preparation, that side of self-defense, the kind of mindset side of the house. And we're teaching quite a bit in 2015, as a matter of fact.
Well, there you go. And we're actually, we'll talk about that a little bit later in the last segment. But the reason why I thought of you and why I wanted to have you on this week, there's been a lot of things in the news lately as far as, depending on who you ask, terrorist events. It seems like that it is becoming very popular to have single actor terrorist-style attacks. Either we've got the hatchet attack in New York City on the four police officers, we've got the beheading out in Oklahoma, we've got the Parliament attack in Canada, et cetera, et cetera. And I guess where I wanted to start is, why do you think those are becoming so popular as of late? Is it just a general feeling of politically motivated stuff, or is it more of just sick people looking for a way to get famous?
Well, also, there was another one, by the way, just recently in D.C., I believe. Someone took a full swing police car sitting in a marked unit with an axe right through the driver's side window. I don't believe the officer was injured.
Nice.
That sort of attack is getting more and more frequent. And, though it's indistinguishable from your point of view, if you're the recipient of the violence, I'm not sure it really matters if this is sort of a planned strategy of atomistic lone wolf attacks, or just severely disturbed individuals acting on their own with kind of no guidance. It doesn't really matter to me, you know, the inspiration behind the hatchet if it hits me in the head. But, you know, when you think about this, let's say from the non-organized end, these folks, you know, tend to be, you know, very inadequate folks. They're not doing well in their lives. And they're drawn to a philosophy that turns all of their weaknesses into strengths. Let's say you're psychosexually inadequate, you know, can't seem to get good relationships going with people that you want to have them with. Well, a worldview and a mindset that says, no, that being abstemious, you know, that not engaging with people in romantic relationships is a virtue. Well, suddenly one of your great weaknesses and points of shame has become a strength of yours. And if you've got other things like that where your worldview organizes your liabilities into assets, well, even better, especially if you're, you know, sort of having a lot of what we call masculine striving, feeling that you're not sort of manly enough. Well, you know, a blaze of glory attack on police is a wonderful way to prove that you always were good enough and strong enough and tough enough. So there's lots of ways that this kind of attack is rooted in some serious social and psychological problems, but also that engaging in it is seen as a cure for those problems.
Right. Well, and you hit on the salient point there, I think, as far as it doesn't really matter if you're on the receiving end of this, as far as the motivation goes. You're stuck dealing with whatever problem has suddenly presented itself. It did, and we talked a little bit about this before the show. We got about 2 minutes left. We're talking with Dr. William April left in this segment. We were talking about before the show, though, is that the level of mental preparation that one has to go through now and the threats that once seemed very silly and outlandish are becoming more commonplace.
It's harder and harder to make fun of, you know, what you might encounter in the world. I mean, you know, there's often a sort of a knock on, you know, prepping that, you know, what the people are prepping for is just almost literally impossible. Well, with the extremity of the stuff that's happening, that's getting less and less true. But it's difficult to find a line to walk that's realistic, but still, still has a wide perspective.
Well, and that seems to be the challenge too. That obviously we want to dedicate our training resources to realistic events and likely scenarios and all that. But kind of what's been intriguing to me is as you watch these things happen, and I know I'm repeating myself, but the likely scenario is becoming more muddled and confused. Do you think that's something? I know I'm asking you to look into a crystal ball, but we got about 40 seconds left. Is that something that we should maybe think about incorporating into training a little bit more, is just the oddball events?
I think we'd have to work at it from both ends. One is, you know, making really robust and rapid response sets that can be used in a variety of circumstances, everything from kind of reasonably unforeseen to unreasonably unforeseen, but also getting more and more tightened up on avoidance and deterrence, preventing the exposure to these kinds of events. So that in itself has a lot of concerns.
Well, yeah, and that's actually a really good place to end. We've got to go to commercial break. When we get back, a little bit more about that with Dr. William April. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Blackfire Ordnance Group. Totally had a problem there. Makers of TNT and TNT Black firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireredgroup.com. Grip it, love it, get it, the tough Walther PPX. Then get $100 worth of PPX accessories free. The PPX is Walther's tough workhorse pistol at a value price. Now get an extra magazine, polymer holster, and dual magazine pouch free with the purchase of a new Walther PPX at participating dealers. Grip the famous ergonomic handle and you'll love it. Shoot it and feel the difference. The Walther PPX. Grip it, love it, get it now. Offer good with $9.95 shipping and handling. See, this is what I get for writing ad copy in between the breaks when both companies start with a B. It's like, ooh, confused. Anyway, we're talking with Dr. William April about some of the interesting, weird, strange things that are going on in the world these days. So, William, before the break, we were talking about whether or not we need to adjust our training or what we need to do to be more prepared for, I guess, the environment that we live in now. And something that you hit on was the avoidance portion of the equation. Do you mind going into that a little bit more?
Well, sure. You know, everybody quotes the famous aphorism by the noted trainer John Farnham, where he said, you know, if you avoid stupid people, stupid places, and stupid things, you know, you'll be safe. But it's difficult to really draw the line at what's stupid. I mean, I don't think it's reasonable to say that we should never appear in public or never stand still on a sidewalk or never go to a gathering of people. Those are things that you can't avoid.
Right.
But there are things that, you know, that certainly can be, I think, prudently avoided, you know, things that are going to be politically charged, things that are going to be, you know, matters of great public controversy, things like that, rallies, gatherings, you know, that might attract an armed or, you know, a sort of terrorist response. But it's getting harder and harder to determine what's dangerous when danger seems to be saturating into more and more areas of public life.
Well, and that brings to mind an interesting question too, and we were sort of talking about this as far as, you know, as far as when you decide to arm yourself for your day-to-day life and you're thinking about carrying a gun, you talk about an interesting concept in your classes as far as what kind of carrier are you. I mean, do you mind discussing that a little bit?
No, not at all. You know, you've got to think about your self-definition when you leave the house as an armed person. I mean, certainly, you know, the easiest one that I think is to fall into is, well, I'm a good guy. You know, I'm leaving the house. I'm one of the good guys.
Right.
Well, okay, sure, but what does that mean? Does that mean you'll be actively seeking out and attempting to stop crime? Does that mean you'll be seeking contact with criminals and seeking to stop their criminal behavior? Those are terribly, terribly different thoughts than I'm carrying this firearm in a sense, as Masayuki calls it, safety rescue equipment, much like a seatbelt or a fire extinguisher or an airbag, where in case something terrible happens, I'll have tools to deal with it. But most dangerously of all, you'll have people who, you know, put on the gun, put on, you know, decide to sort of take up self-defense and don't give it a single further thought. What would I do if?
Right.
And then when a situation does arise, they're going to play out the responses that they've settled on, even if they've settled on them unconsciously, and they may find themselves biting off much more than they can chew. There was a notable case in the Pacific Northwest of an off-duty police officer who engaged in a mall shooting, engaged a mall shooter who was armed with an SKS with a single compact 1911 pistol with a single magazine in it. Seven or eight rounds of .45 against somebody with a long gun was not a very good choice. But had he had a chance to think it through, he wouldn't have done it. He was instead playing out his decision without ever consciously having walked through what that decision entailed.
Right. Well, and I remember that case, too. I want to say he was having dinner with his pregnant wife.
Girlfriend.
And it's like, hey, call the cops and let them know I'm in here.
Yeah.
You know, and to suddenly find yourself in that situation, you've not really given it any more thought than, hey, I have a gun. Now,
it's difficult because if you think about that, you know, there's a police officer duty-bound and trained to sort of go and engage, and he knows that in a mall shooting, you know, a lone gunman walking around with a long gun is shooting people. Every second that passes could be someone who's dying, and he might find the responding officer might find just an irresistible moral drive to intervene, that he cannot let that go unopposed.
Mm-hmm. And
meanwhile, having not thought that out, he's going to launch in without what he needs to do that effectively.
Well, it's funny you mention that, too, just because I know sheepdog is one of those terms that I personally cannot stand just because I think it's been perverted from its original intent and has sort of started to embody this thing that I don't care for. But, you know, I know in my own personal day-to-day life, if I didn't have my son with me, if I was by myself and happened to be somewhere, you know, I've got a long gun that's secured in my vehicle. I've also got body armor that's secured in my vehicle. And that's not because I really expect that I'll ever need that in my day-to-day, but it's like you said, I have a pretty solid idea that if I were standing in a parking lot and saw someone walk into Kenwood Mall and start shooting, that I'd probably go in there after them, whether or not I had those things. So I choose to have those things.
Right. It would be a question of, you know, would you be able to bear not doing it? And, you know, it's not my place to say that, you know, one decision in that case is wrong and one decision is right. But a lot of the thinking about this becomes very rote. I mean, you'll hear people say over and over and over again, 911, not 1911, that your job is to be a good witness and that's all. You know, save your own life, save your own loved ones, and everyone else is fungible. Well, those sound great as knee-jerk responses, but if deep down you can't allow that, you can't allow the innocent to be brutalized within the scope of your influence, it's going to be very, very tough to sit there and not intervene. And so I would like to think about, you know, will you undertake that kind of response, whether it's a good idea or not? You know, one well-known trainer that I know has said that he would rather die than give a mugger a dollar. That it's not worth it to him to surrender that, you know, dollar's worth of dignity, so to speak.
Huh.
Well, it's not my place to say that's right or wrong, but at least he's thought it through.
Mm-hmm.
He has reached a decision that he feels suits his lifestyle. Now the question is, will he punch his weight? Will he carry the gear and have the training and have the mindset to make that decision survivable?
So I guess the number one thing is that when we're thinking about the level of training that we want to dedicate our time and resources to, and we're thinking about the amount of things that we want to carry with us, have a really solid idea of what your response is going to be in certain situations, then make sure that your training and equipment reflect that?
Sure. That's it in a nutshell. You know, but really think about the decisions and not what's tactically correct or politically correct or what sounds good,
yeah.
But what can you bear to do and bear not to do? What, you know, what is truly what we call an authentic gesture that, you know, represents truly who you are? And if yours is, look, I feel sorry for those people being executed, but, you know, they're not me, they're not my loved ones, and this is just their day, and I'm going to go be a good witness. Well, okay, that makes sense. And if the opposite is true, okay, that makes sense too. But everything has to be coherent. My preparation, my planning, training, equipment. And if you're going to go looking for trouble, you'd better be ready for finding it.
Well, and to be clear too, is that when you say something like looking for trouble, we're not talking out, you know, like we're not talking about going out as I want to say it was Applegate in his later years did and troll for muggers. we're talking about you're in your day-to-day life and you see something happening that you could influence if you choose to, but you're not directly involved in that situation yet.
Mm-hmm. But that line gets awfully fine when you think, and I hate to harp on it again, but when you think about the George Zimmerman case.
I was going to bring it up, so I'm glad you did.
He went looking for trouble. Now, does that mean he was, you know, trying doorknobs and making sure that things were locked? No, but it does mean that when he saw somebody unfamiliar in his neighborhood, he interjected himself into that event, saying, you know, I am going to engage this event, whether engaging the person or not. He was opening a box where we really didn't know the content. But we can say that his preparation, you know, sort of a, you know, Kel-Tec and nothing else, didn't match his level of investment. That's not a gear loadout
right.
That lends itself to looking for much trouble.
Well, and I think that's something else that gets overlooked a lot of times is occasionally trouble finds us and we have nothing that we can do about it. You know, you're sitting in the movie theater waiting for the premiere and then all of a sudden someone walks in with the AR-15 and starts shooting. Well, then you need to problem solve that right now. But there seems to be another side of it that, you know, I can't think that anyone necessarily talks about it, where there's not as much thought process beforehand as far as what we'll find ourselves in. There's lip service that's paid to it, but like you said, you know, what will you actually do?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it can get a little tricky when preparing to have someone with an AR-15 burst into the movie theater is something that no normal person does.
Right.
I mean, you know, because, hey, you wouldn't be in the theater if you knew that someone was going to burst in the back with an AR-15.
Exactly.
So it's a matter of what is, you know, what's congruent with my lifestyle, what matches my lifestyle, what matches my internal judgments about what I will and won't get involved in, and covers as much as practicable of things that might happen. You know, that might realistically happen. even if the things that might realistically happen are very, rare and unusual events in and of themselves.
Well, and that was
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that was kind of the impetus behind the Sentinel Events article that I wrote, was just to draw attention to the fact that these rare, isolated events are becoming less and less rare and isolated. We've got about 20 seconds left in this segment, so I think when we get back, what we should maybe talk about a little bit more is, you know, what exactly, why do people oftentimes talk poorly about other people's preparation, if that's all right with you?
Sure.
All right. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group, makers of firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfirerdgroup.com. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms, parts, and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top-name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Bear, Sig Sauer, and many more, as well as premium AR pattern rifles. Whether you are looking to protect yourself, are a first-time gun buyer, or a competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for SIG parts and accessories. So, this evening we are talking with Dr. William April about unlikely events and whether or not they're still unlikely, and also, too, understanding what your response, your natural response, is to those events and preparing accordingly for them. So, William, before we went to break, I was briefly touched on the topic of, you know, it's very popular in our community to look at one person's level of preparation and sort of talk down about it, whether it's less than ours or more than ours. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think mostly from blindness to the opinions of others who are in a different place on the same continuum. I mean, you know, there are plenty of people who will look at someone who carries two guns and say that person's a maniac, even if they carry one. Well, there's someone who carries no guns who looks at someone who carries one gun as an absolute maniac. But also, you know, we're prisoners of our own experience. When people have, you know, gained understanding of an event that might happen, either by, you know, seeing or hearing about it or experiencing it themselves, they'll ratchet up their level of preparation retroactively to encompass that event. Well, if you haven't had that event and no exposure to that event, you won't do that automatically.
Right.
Or what? Preemptively. And so, you know, you can only prepare for what you can conceive of. And if you can't conceive of what that other person is preparing for, it just seems ridiculous.
Well, and that's interesting, too, because I oftentimes carry more than one firearm. And the reason for that is I've had several instances where I've pulled out my carry gun and it's not gone off when I've pulled the trigger. And most this has happened during training, but that makes an impression on you the first time you hear a click as opposed to a bang, and it certainly makes a very large impression the second or third time it happens.
Mm-hmm. You know, but there's I think, you know, where it gets a little odd is this: there's a slippery slope effect. You know,
mm-hmm.
if one is none and two is one, well, if I want two, is three two? you know, and it's four three to make sure that I have two. It can get, you know, a little bit strange.
Right.
And so if you have a rational basis for it, if you can say, look, I shoot enough that I've seen enough malfunctions that I want to have the possibility of that covered, I don't think that's unreasonable.
Yeah.
To say I need two guns because I need two guns, well, that's not a very well thought out answer. And it kind of lends itself to ridicule. But generally, people tend to, you know, mock what they don't understand. And if someone is preparing for something that seems terribly likely to them, but we just can't conceive of it, it's easier to make fun of it than it is to try and understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, conceiving of things that are threatening to us is uncomfortable, and we generally don't do it. You know, experience is a rough teacher, and so we try to avoid it by and large. So, you know, I think it would be wise to, you know, to learn from the experience of others. But again, your preparations have to fit into your lifestyle, or you simply won't do them. I mean, we've all seen people, you know, who show up at a match, take off an itty-bitty gun, and put on a very large gun to compete with. And so that, you know, that to me is a pretty obvious contrast between what they actually do and what they say they do. And so it's the former, it's the small gun. That's their real level of investment and real level of preparation.
So, I mean, is it... You mentioned looking at the experience of others, and obviously I'm in the position where, for whatever reason, people look to me for advice on things of this nature. And I often tell people that just because I do it doesn't mean you need to do it. But where do you draw that line as far as even when you're looking at the experience of other people? I mean, the stuff that I do because of my experience is not the stuff that Paul Howe does because of his experience, is not the stuff that Kyle Lamb does because of his experience, or Pat McNamara does because of his experience, or any of those gentlemen. So is it just finding someone that most fits our own personal lifestyle and kind of rolling with it?
Sure, because, you know, the advice you get from someone who's been, a special operations, soldier for decades is certainly going to be valuable and hard-won information, but not that valuable to someone like you or like me.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you think about people whose lifestyles are like yours, whose sort of risk profile is like yours, but also then you've got to keep in mind that some very high-level practitioners are able to sort of fudge things that they wouldn't ordinarily recommend. I mean, like, let's say Claude Warner, tactical professor. This is a guy who's perfectly comfortable carrying a single stack 22 pistol in a McDonald's bag.
Yeah.
And is perfectly prepared, but not because of the 22 in the bag, because of his decades of research into human behavior and intelligence work and his military background. So his counterbalancing avoidance, deterrence, de-escalation, counter-surveillance, all of these techniques factor in to his ability to avoid circumstances that would require more gun than he's carrying. So it's not to say, well, if he can do it, I can do it. So a 22 in a McDonald's bag is the perfect self-defense rig. Well, not if you don't share those other attributes and not if you don't have those other skills. So it's wise to look at the attributes, the background of people who are advocating, one thing or another, and right. See if it fits in your life.
Well, and it's interesting, too, that you mentioned that, because I was having a conversation on the Facebook page recently about sighted versus unsighted fire, and someone quoted Taron Butler, who is an amazingly talented shooter, and said, well, he doesn't use the sights inside of 25 yards. And my response to that was, no one commenting in this thread is Taron Butler, though, either. And that seems to be an oftentimes missed point as well, is that because of the attributes that other people have does not mean that the way they do things is necessarily intelligent for you. As far as, I guess, how we incorporate things into our training, when you talk about a risk profile, what is that exactly?
Well, if you think about the kinds of risks you might run across in your daily life, like let's say professionally, if you're a stockbroker, well, you have a certain risk profile. The numbers of folks that might do you ill that you'd encounter on a given day. And I don't mean folks that are set out to do you harm, but the number of folks that are somewhere in between, folks deciding whether to do you harm. But let's say you are a courier who carries cash, or someone who empties ATM machines for a living. Well, your risk profile is much, much higher because you're in contact with something that people want and something that people will use violence to get. But it doesn't mean that anyone is exempt from a risk profile. Let's say, I'm a housewife. I stay home. Or I'm a stay-home dad. I stay home all day. I don't have any risks. Well, sure you do. But your risks now are people breaking into a home that they think is unoccupied and being surprised to find you there. So it's a matter of looking at your life and the risks you would encounter on a daily basis in your day in, day out life, but to try and not fall into the trap of thinking that if it hasn't happened yet, it isn't going to happen. I always say, whenever you're talking about the future, just make sure you end the sentence with the word yet. No one has kicked in my back door yet.
Right.
But really thinking about your life and the things you do during the day that might bring you into contact with people that would do you harm. That's your sort of individual risk profile.
And I think one of the things that Claude would point out is that if you really want an idea of what's going on in your town, read the newspaper.
Absolutely. The newspaper is a wonderful example of what happened in your town? What are trends and the kinds of patterns and behavior that are happening in your town? But also keep in mind, it also is remarkable for what it doesn't include. I mean, if you read, let's say, John Lott's research on defensive gun uses, there are millions of defensive gun uses a year in America. But as Tom Gibbons points out, every other crime that was committed without a defensive gun use, one could have been enacted. Every mugging that wasn't resisted with armed force could have been. And so the numbers of, you know, defensive gun uses should actually be much, much higher if people were more aware, if people had an understanding of what happens, what they're exposed to, and prepared for it, even minimally. You know, a 1% change could produce just staggering numbers of events and prevent or mitigate, you know, a staggering number of crimes.
Well, and that seems to be an interesting point, too, is how do we make people more aware of the events that could take place or transpire, to be repetitive? You know, how do we can't teach someone the will to live, and this was an argument that I had with Jeff Gonzalez, but I think he was missing my point. But how do we just make people aware of what happens? I mean, let's say you've never driven a car before. You don't know how they work, and you don't know that if you stomp on the brakes, if the road's icy, that the brakes will lock up and you'll just slide. Well, then they don't know why ABS is an important thing to look for in a car. So how do we make people understand things like, well, you know, a reload's not necessary very often, but when it is, it really is, or a second gun or a tourniquet or whatever. I mean, how do we teach that?
Well, it's important to me that what we think about is not what we want to get something to do, but we want change. We want change from the state someone is in right now, let's say sort of, you know, condition white in Cooper's expression, to something more. We can't have an end state that we want to the exclusion of all others and then beat the person over the head until we get it. Because gun people talking to non-gun people tend to go so far beyond the changes that the non-gun person is willing to make that, to use your analogy about driving, it's the equivalent of trying to convince someone to get a driver's license by talking about the merits of tires, one brand of tire versus another.
Yes.
It's so far down the road. We don't understand how small our interventions need to be to start the process of change. It isn't going to happen in one fell swoop. But all real change starts with what we call salience. The thing that needs to be changed has to be important to the person that we would like to change, not us.
Right.
It's got to be important to them. And so what I often start with...
Let me interrupt just because we have to go break, but we'll pick up right there. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by Boresight Solutions. Boresight Solutions offers high-end custom modification services for hard-use pistols and rifles. See why industry, law enforcement, and military professionals have chosen to carry Boresight Solutions firearms. Pat Rogers, Craig Douglas, and Kyle Lamb, just to name a few, have entrusted Boresight Solutions with their personal carry guns. When I'm not busy torture testing project guns, I trust my life to a Boresight Solutions pistol. Quality craftsmanship, improved ergonomics, and amazing attention to detail are what you will receive with every custom Boresight Solutions firearm. Boresight Solutions, tools to live by. I almost made it all the way through, but I don't think ergonomics is a word. Well, in fairness, I did just write that ad copy. So anyway, check out Boresight Solutions. They make really, really interesting modifications to polymer pistols and steel frame pistols and every pistol and rifle. So anyway, discussing with William April the unforeseen circumstances that can befall us and how we should be more aware of those. We were talking about something before the break, and I interrupted you. If you could pick up where you were at, William.
Oh, you mean we're not going to talk about ergonomics anymore?
Ergonomics. Get it right. It's not ergonomics. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, but again, picture, you know, using your analogy. If you wanted to talk to someone about taking a safe driving course, what you wouldn't do is say, you need to buy this car and these tires right now. Mm-hmm. When they said, well, I don't want to do that, throw up your hands and walk away, which is what most gun guys do when they're faced with people, you know, who are in denial, sheeple, and use lots of negative words about them. You would say, well, I don't know, do you drive much? Yeah. Oh, okay. Do you drive with your kids? Have you ever seen bad driving while you had kids in the car? Oh, okay. We would start making it relevant to them, making it salient to them, to get them to understand. You know, the joke in my business is you can lead a horse to water and you can't make him drink, of course, but try and make him thirsty. That's the point. So can you make an increased attention to one's own personal safety salient to the person that you're trying to convince? The goal isn't to get them to go out and buy a particular gun. The goal is to get them to take an interest in it, and that interest will slowly develop over time. But gun guys do more to alienate non-gun people than anti-gun guys ever could. It's really sad, but true.
Well, it's funny that we like to belittle people that don't fall into our own personal way of thinking, which I've never understood. And I'm not saying that I've not done it in the past, but at least in recent memory, I can't remember ever doing that.
But it's not a very good sales pitch to say, come join my club, because if you don't, you're an idiot.
And you'll die.
Yeah, not a good pitch. If you don't join my club, your children will die. Well, okay, I will likely think that you're a maniac and walk away. And so, you know, if we want our community to get bigger, we've got to be better stewards of it, I think. And that means neatening up our own thinking.
Well, and that's interesting you mention it, too, because even inside of the gun community, we could make the same argument as far as when we start talking about people that roll around with long guns or plate carriers. And I don't even like discussing that with people, just because even I am aware of the fact that that seems strange to me, mm-hmm. you know, but I still do it because of certain things that I've seen occur other places and wanting to be prepared for it. So,
well, but if someone were to say to you, well, goodness, I just read a book about the Mumbai, you know, the Mumbai terrorist episode where a hotel was taken over. And you know what? I think I'm going to add a shotgun, my home defense shotgun, to my bag the next time I'm going to be traveling for work. That's not an unreasonable basis for that decision.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I'm going to walk around, you know, in a chest rig through the lobby of the hotel. But it means that something that seems likely in an environment that I do frequent was just brought to my attention. I think you'd have to find a good reason to ignore that. And I don't think at least contemplating it is crazy.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, William. You've justified your presence on the show this evening.
Well, there you have it.
Yeah.
Well, but, you know, the flip side is, you know, we don't want to be part of the crowd that alienates the aware, so to speak. I mean, if you talk to any working police officer, they'll tell you that police officers who are interested in guns and self-defense are thought of as nuts by their fellow cops. Oh, he's a gun guy. They don't use a gun guy in a favorable sense. And so even people who are engaged in a profession of arms, if they take an interest in it, they're thought of as wacky. Wacky at best.
It seems a misconception is that if you are preparing to that level, then you are looking forward to utilizing that preparedness, which I've never found to be the case.
Well, you know, Matt Saib's line, you know, will stand forever. He said, why do you have seatbelts? Are you planning on having an accident?
Yeah.
You know, of course not. But, you know, we want the seatbelts in case there's an accident and in case it's beyond our control. You know, we don't put seatbelts in the car so that we can drive into things.
Right.
But, you know, we all know people where we've rolled our eyes and gone, oh, mm-hmm. gee whiz, holy mackerel. That preparation seems a little nutty.
Yeah, I think...
You have to hear the rationale for it.
I think also you people say that you're just chomping at the bit to do something, but I think all of us have come across violent activities where we just didn't jump in and, you know, pull our gun out and Glock the guy, you know, six times because he was beating up his buddy in a bar fight.
Right.
So that really doesn't happen.
Well, I think it's a famous quote by Homer, is the sword itself incites mm-hmm. to deeds of violence,
right,
which...
Right, right.
A hippie said that, and they were wrong back then, and they're wrong now, but still.
Yeah, you know, the early kind of anti-gun psychology of the 70s in particular, there was a kind of a catchphrase that dominated that sector of academic psychology, was that the trigger pulls the finger,
mm-hmm. yeah.
that the gun itself makes it more likely that someone will do it. And you heard that arguments about Florida's concealed carry law, the streets will run red with blood.
Yeah.
Well, they don't. I mean, you know, concealed carriers are by and large more law-abiding than a similar size sample of regular citizens who don't have permits.
When they mess up, like in the Ursuline case, or but it happened in Florida, they go to prison for the rest of their lives. There's zero leniency there, as it should be,
and certainly should, because you know when you wear a gun out of the house, you are saying I'm assuming the right to take life if necessary. That's an unbelievable responsibility,
right.
And when it's abused, we should punish those people, you know, to the fullest extent of the law, and drum them out of our community with real disgust for what they've done.
Right.
We've got to push an agenda of having people think more about what they're doing.
Well, I'm glad
especially if they're in the community.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because we're coming up on the end of the show. Now, you do teach classes. We're actually going to be bringing you out December 20th to the Cincinnati area, and you're going to be discussing some of the mindset stuff that you talked about, as well as some other things. Can you talk just a little bit about your class?
Yeah, it's a block of material that I call unthinkable, because the goal of the class is explicitly to bring stuff from the realm of the unthought about to the realm of the thought about, because many of these decisions are uncomfortable. And our minds don't take to them very easily, and so we have to drag them from the back of our minds to the very front of our minds and really think about it. Really think about, you know, do you engage with people that you shouldn't without thinking? You know, I frequently get people who take this class say, you know, this is really hard for me because things that make me more vulnerable to criminals seem terribly natural, and I don't know that I can stop doing them.
Right.
Well, good. That's looking one of your own limitations right in the face in the light of day. And then we can start planning for it.
Okay.
You know, it's not about changing necessarily, but getting in alignment with how we are.
Right. And that seems to be the important part. Hey, we ran out of time. William, I appreciate your time this evening. So
looking forward to December.
Hey, I am too. I'll put more information up on the show's page. You enjoy the rest of your night, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem. So I believe next week we're going to be doing some more Facebook users questions and answers on the show. Just a quick reminder, check out ballisticradio.com. We're doing a benefit drive for Jason Harwood, who was a police officer that was murdered in Topeka, Kansas, raising money for his wife and two children. You can look at that on ballisticradio.com. Check out the Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. I'll post a link there too. See you next week, everybody. Be safe.